You're listening to Behind the Music Biz, a Raised Rowdy podcast. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Music Biz. Matt Burrell here hosting today, and today a very special guest, a longtime friend of Raised Rowdy, somebody that is very intertwined with us. He's a producer in town. He's the founder of the Amber Sound, a guy that I've known for a long time, a native of South Carolina, and a guy that's been doing it in town for about 10 years now. A guy, Ryan Yeomans. Ryan, thanks for coming on here. How you doing, brother?
Man, I'm good. I'm happy to be here today.
Dude, yeah, you were saying it was like 5 years ago that we did the Grapevine podcast talking about the Burn It At Both Ends record.
Yeah, that's the last time you and I have been on the air together. So.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, about, man. How's life? How's everything at the Amber Sound? Man,
things are good. Getting to make a lot of music that I'm proud of here recently. Trying to push some boundaries with some things. You know, being in town 10 years now, I feel like I've accomplished a lot. But I'm finally just getting to where I feel like it can stretch things out a little bit. It's like, Yeah. You know, I've recorded a lot of music over 10 years, but I've grown through that, and I feel like I'm finally figuring out what I really like. And so now I'm pushing harder into that. I'm less, I guess I'm being a little less cautious than I was for a long time.
Yeah.
So it's a cool season to be in right now, creatively.
Yeah, man. And it's like your story, you're a South Carolina guy. You went through learning audio in college, Clemson, shout out Clemson Tigers, yeah. Even though my girlfriend is a Gamecocks fan, I will say I do love that era. And you're originally from Okotie, South Carolina?
Pronounced Okotie.
Okotie, Carolina way.
Okotie. It's down there right between Beaufort and Bluffton, about an hour and a half south of Charleston or so.
Nice.
Yeah, down there in the low country, as they call it.
Yeah, so what kind of led you to wanting to get into the music world? Because I know you've played as well, you've been out on the road doing that. You've been out on the road as an engineer and PM and doing all of that as well. So what kind of got you into it?
Yeah, it started with the love of music. So I started playing guitar when I remember trying to play guitar when I was 12, but I had these real chubby short fingers. And I remember just like, oh, my finger just, I can't make the chords. It won't stretch. So I found someone at the church I grew up in to teach me drums instead. And so they had a set of the electronic drums, the Roland V drums.
Yeah.
And after Wednesday night church, he'd give me like an hour lesson. And I started kind of piecing together the drums. A couple years, you know, I start my first band when I was 13 with a couple upperclassmen, and we're covering Jet and Green Day and just playing a lot of punk rock, in my buddy Jeremy's house. And it all kind of started from there. Then I picked up guitar, started my own pop punk band in high school, fronted that for 3 years. And that's what got me into recording, because we wrote a couple songs. I was like, well, we got to record these. People want them, right? You know, they're just begging to have these recordings of these great songs. So that's when I took my old Dell laptop, and I had this software called Audacity.
Oh, yeah. I used Audacity in college radio and audio production.
Uh-huh. So it started with the tiny mixer in Audacity and just like three microphones, one aimed at the drum kit, one of the vocal, and one of the guitar amp. And I think we might have had a fourth channel for the bass, or maybe he got left out. I can't really remember. But that was kind of my foray into recording. But even then, I didn't plan to be a producer when I was 15, 16. So I wanted to be a rock star. You know what I mean? It's like, I'd kind of gotten a taste of playing on stage and people being into it and reacting with the crowd. So that's kind of where I started. But being a realist, I realized I was not that good. And I didn't think I was going to be good enough to make that happen. So I originally went to Clemson University to study mechanical engineering because I was always good at math. And I was like, well, let me get a real job that'll pay me enough money that I can just do whatever I want with music.
Yeah.
But about 6 weeks into that, I realized I don't think I want to stare at a computer screen doing math for my entire life. So I dropped out of their engineering program, and Clemson had an audio technology program. Very small. They took 12 students a year. And I'd heard about it, but I wasn't really impressed with it, to be honest.
Yeah.
But, you know, I needed to stay in college. I wasn't ready to do anything at 18 years old. I was like, I'm going to stick in the college thing. I'll just do their audio program. I'll get the degree. make mom and dad happy, have my college experience. But while I was there at Clemson, I wrote songs with everyone. I started getting more into songwriting. I wrote with anyone I could write with. I recorded anybody I could find to record, and kind of started my production career then. That was the first time I got serious. I was like, well, I'm going to have to get a real job. I'm not going to be able to make it as a guitar player or bass player. So I guess I'll just try to record real talent.
Yeah. And South Carolina has always been a hotbed for great music, whether it's country, whether it's Southern rock, whether it's blues, whether it's like whatever. There's such a vibrant scene. I think it gets overlooked a lot. Like what comes out of Greenville, what comes out of Anderson, what comes out of Myrtle. Like
there's a lot of cool music come out of Charleston.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Charleston's a great hub right now.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, you know, obviously South Carolina gets to claim Darius Rucker, Band of Horses out of Charleston.
Yeah, Marshall Tucker Band's
a great one. Yeah. So I spent 3.5 years at Clemson, just kind of cutting my teeth, recording, trying to songwrite. And then, a buddy of mine at Clemson, I'd played in his pop rock band. And then he came to Nashville, came back after an internship. He's like, I'm doing country music now. And so I started playing bass with him, playing club gigs. You know, I'd started learning the 40 or 50 country songs, and we'd play at the bars or whatever. And then he ended up graduating and moving to Nashville a year before I did. And he's like, man, you can make a living up here just playing chicken fried, you know? And I'm like, what? Really? I could pay rent on that? He's like, yeah. And I was like, okay. And so he sent me a list of, I think, 180 songs my last semester of college. And I just started learning those songs every day after class so that whenever I moved up here, I'd have some way to make money.
Yeah.
So I moved up here in, it was 2 days after Christmas of 2014. So might as well say January of 2015, just a little over 10 years ago. And started paying rent by playing down on Broadway, four-hour cover shifts.
What were the bars like back then? Because it's a different Nashville than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, there was, what, maybe a third of how many there are now. You know, the main ones were Tootsie's, Rippy's, Honky Tonk Central.
Yeah.
And those that's kind of the circuit I ran in for a while. And then I was also working as an extra on the show Nashville.
Oh, nice.
Because they paid $8 an hour, and they would feed you. So those were good days whenever I got booked to be, you know, most of the time I was just walking through a park or just standing in a concert scene. But I was just trying to piece it together, whatever I could do to pay the rent for those first, you know, 6 or 7 months that I didn't know anybody here.
Yeah. And then fast forward about a year or so, it might have even been 2 years, you meet two kids from Mobile, Alabama.
Dude, you wouldn't believe this. It was actually my fourth month in town.
Oh, really?
So I go out to play a show in Athens, Georgia with Ray Fulcher and Pat Cooper.
Oh,
I played with both of them that night because Ray's bass player, Davis Branch, had to miss the gig for whatever reason. And I get there, and there's this guy named Gary who has a camera in his hand. And he came along to do photography.
Wow.
And Gary is not a photographer.
No, he'll not at all. We love you, Gary.
But if I'm remembering the story right, you know, he had just moved to town. He was just trying to meet anyone and everyone he could. And we ended up hanging out after the show, just talking about music. And he's like, yeah, man, I'm starting this duo with my buddy Charlie. You know, we're looking for a producer. I want to record some stuff. And I was like, oh, well. I'm a producer, Gary. Did you know that? You know, I think I was 22 years old at the time, been in Nashville 3 months, you know? And so that's how we made that original connection, was backstage at Hedges on Broad in Athens, Georgia.
Oh, yeah. Now that place is called, I've been there, as it's known as The Warehouse.
Yes.
Because it's changed
a few times, if I remember right.
Yeah, but such a historic spot, and it just goes to show, like, you wouldn't have had that gig if you weren't filling in for a buddy.
Yep.
And then that leads to you recording Porch Swing Angel with those guys.
Yeah, we recorded Porch Swing Angel in October later that year, like 6 months after I met Gary. And back in 2015.
Yeah, and what was the studio set up for you back then?
Well, so actually at the time, I'd been interning at a studio called 4115 over in East Nashville. And after I finished the internship, they would let me use the studio for cheap because we'd kind of become friends and all. So we actually recorded Porch Swing Angel, Southern Boy Cure, and Shut Your Mouth at that studio that I'd just finished interning at. So that was the only stuff that I did with Muscadine outside of my own place. But very lucky that I kind of had a place, because at the time that we recorded those, I had a very small basement studio in a rental house in Donelson. Like, I mean, it was It was what you would expect a basement studio to look like.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
I had the cheapest equipment. I had like four good microphones.
Yeah.
It wasn't legit at all. In fact, but we did do one. There's a live in studio version of Southern Boy Cure on YouTube. That's from that original studio with, I think, Tyson Thaxton playing cajon, because Tyson had been playing with Ray.
Yeah.
Those were the only guys I knew at the time, was the people I'd met playing around with Ray Fulcher and also.
Yeah. And then that is also where Zoltan came into the fold, because they met him at that session for Porch Swing.
So I had met Zoltan playing on Broadway that summer. He played one Broadway gig. He was filling in for my buddy Cal Eggert. And Chattahoochee gets called, and Zoltan just looks at me. Zoltan's got no idea, like, what's Chattahoochee? And I'm just like, train. And I swear, he started that song off like 15 BPM too fast. We were cruising, and I was just like, slow, slower. But I made good friends with him in July of that year. So whenever it came time to do that Muscadine thing, I was like, oh, well, that Zoltan guy was really cool. You know, at the time, I probably only knew four drummers in Nashville. So I was like, oh, let's just call up Zoltan. He'll come over here for $50 and like play some drums.
Yeah.
And yeah. So that's how they met Zoltan, was bringing him in to play on Porch Swing Angels. So then they were like, oh, yeah, that guy's cool. So whenever they started wanting to bring a drummer on the road, he was kind of their first choice.
Yeah. So then how does it become now where you're doing, where you have this thing that's the Amber Sound, where you go from interning at a studio or working at a studio that you're able to use after hours, you have your small basement set up, to now what were the early iterations of the Amber Sound?
Yeah, it's been kind of one long, slow growth. I guess it was May of 16, we bought the house that the studio is now in. Had a walkout basement, and it was, I think, 850 or 900 square foot. And that's what I was trying to find. Let's find us a house that has a space that I can have a small studio, never expected it to be a big thing, but have a separate entrance so that people don't feel like they're walking around in your house, and have a separate bathroom. And we found that here in Hermitage. So in May 16, we bought the place. I started ripping out the carpet, the drop tile ceiling. I did some plywood floor. Looking back, it was a terrible idea to do plywood floor. The thing started warping and buckling everywhere, and then I was having to go back with concrete screws and like, all right, it's real squishy right there. Let's just pull it down into the slab there. It's squishy there. And looking back, it was a terrible, terrible idea, but I was just trying to do things as cheap as I could at the time. And I built in a little control room, little vocal booth, did a couple live Ray Fulcher videos in there. There's a live Muscadine WD-40 done in that original basement style studio in there. But after I've kind of proven the concept that, I can record some decent stuff in here. I guess it was June of 2019, decided to break ground on the big studio, because we had a one-year-old at the time who was making a lot of racket upstairs. And then my wife and kid were having to deal with the loud drums downstairs.
Oh, yeah.
Or if we're like recording like the piano or a fiddle or something, I have to ask my wife like, hey, can you take Hank out of the house for 2 hours? And she'd be like, this is our house. I don't want to go anywhere right now. So that's when I kind of realized like, all right, we need to kind of take this to the next level. And we ended up building on that 600 square foot live room. And at that point I was like, all right, I'm either all in. I've either got to like spend the money and make this place legit, or I'm going to just have to go back to like renting other studios. And indie budgets are not friendly with renting other studios.
No.
I started looking at what it would cost me, and I'm like, I can't make any money on that. Anything I would be charging the people I'm working with would all be going to paying for the studio space.
Yeah, and you also don't want to overcharge these indie acts.
Well, no, they're
not. You know where they're at.
Yeah, I know. They weren't making any money. I wasn't making any money. And if we just start having to rent these other studios, it's like, well, now no one except that other studio is making any money.
Yeah.
So I decided just to go all in on it. And, you know, obviously the first... that was finished early 2020, which ended up being great timing, because with the pandemic, no one could tour. So now all of a sudden everybody's recording, and I had just finished the studio. It was functional. So that timing couldn't have worked out any better.
Yeah. And that was around the era when I was on the road with Gary and Charlie. And that was when I was popping over there, and we were hanging out over there. And it's become like, now you've done some incredible things in there. The live room, like just seeing how that building has what it's become, where it's upstairs and it's downstairs now.
Yeah.
And you got Matt in there working with you. How'd you meet him? Because I know he's an integral part of what you guys do.
Yeah, so
there.
Matt Poole and I met a few months before I moved to Nashville. He was running sound at Rippy's as a 19-year-old.
Wow.
And I remember I was there to see my buddy Jerry Jacobs play. He was my college buddy.
Oh, I love Jerry, by the way.
So, yeah, I came to visit him that summer. He's like, yeah, come hang out, see what Nashville's like. And so I'm there watching Jerry play at Rippy's, and I was like, I see Matt over at the console. I was like, you know, I wonder what this job's kind of like. You know, I'm going to have to be able to pay some rent when I move here. And I go over there, it's like, hey, man, like, would you recommend working down here on Broadway? And he's like, run as dry as he can, run as far away as you can. He just leaves me with that. And I was like, oh, okay. And I didn't talk to him again that night because I was like, all right.
Yeah.
But, you know, 6 months later, I'm in Nashville and I'm playing Rippy's every Monday and Tuesday. And there's Matt, our sound guy, two nights a week. I'm here with them. So we just ended up becoming friends because we're just seeing him every single week. We start cutting up a little bit. And he had a small studio in Mount Juliet in the upstairs of his house, like a two-bedroom situation with a bathroom in between. So after I had started the Amber Sound in 2016, I knew he was in that tiny spot and I knew he had some gear and I did not have much gear. So I was like, hey dude, you know, would you consider joining forces here? I've got this bigger studio. You know, I know you're kind of cramped and you said you wanted a bigger spot. I've got this bigger studio. You've got some great gear. You know, what would you say about bringing the gear over and let's just split the studio? And he was on board. And so that was 2017. So we're in 8 years of sharing the studio space together now.
Yeah.
Which has been great. Just having someone to say like, hey, listen to this. Does this sound right to you? Like, is this cool? What do you think about this? Someone to bounce ideas off of has been really crucial over the past 8 years. Cause you can drive yourself crazy sometimes. Like, I think this is cool, but yeah, I don't know. I'm in too deep on it, you know? And just having someone else around is great for your sanity.
Yeah. And you're working with a lot of folks in there now. I know like Muscadine's kind of like the flagship and the way that those guys create, and we'll get into all of that, but how do you kind of balance keeping your ears going and your mind going, working on so many different projects? Cause everybody's sound is a little bit different.
Well, that's the comforting thing, but also the frustrating thing is everybody hears everything differently. Yeah. You know what? So one guy listens to and thinks is awesome. The other guy listens to and thinks is absolute trash. So you got to try to learn what the artist is into and learn how the artist hears things. You know, some artists, you know, you'll send them a mix or whatever and they hear the vocal. That's all they hear. They're listening to everything in the vocal. They might not even notice the snare drum or the kick drum or the bass guitar or anything. And you kind of learn like what's important to them and what catches their ear. So knowing, it's like dating. You get to know someone the longer you work with them, and then you can start to kind of read their mind a little bit and kind of learn their tendencies. And that's the cool part about it, because you can't treat every artist the same because everybody's so different and they all have a different set of ears. They've got a different brain. So at the end of the day, I'm trying to make sure that I'm doing what they're into, their thing, while also, you know, making sure I like it and kind of being some quality control.
Yeah, and
because there's no right or wrong about any of it. If someone's like, I want the guitar way louder, technically it's not wrong, it's art.
Yeah.
So I'm always just trying to balance, trying to keep us within the guardrails a little bit, you know what I mean? But also leaning into what they're into. All right, if they love that guitar cranked, they're the artist, let's crank that guitar.
Yeah, and you get to work with so many people from the ground level. Like the indie thing is such a big part
That's
of what
fun.
You guys
yeah.
do.
Yeah, because a lot of people I get to work with, like not too many people have gotten in their ears yet about what they should be doing. So they're still kind of calling the shots and like deciding what they want to do. And I think that's the most fun place to be.
Yeah. And two guys that really stand out for me looking at people that you've had in there are recently, like, I mean, going back, like Tyler Halverson, one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And I know Gary works on that with you, which is cool. And then Hudson Westbrook.
Yeah.
And those are two guys that you've gotten to kind of work with like square one. What's it been like watching what those two have done? Because again, two very different kind of sounds.
Yeah. No, working with Tyler is cool because he was confident. When I met him, also 2020, a lot happened that year. I think Gary had seen an Instagram story of him playing Beer Garden Baby at like Revival or something like that. And Gary was like, hey, like, have you heard this kid? I was like, no, I hadn't heard this guy. But he had a confidence about him and what he was doing. What he was doing was different. And that's huge. like doing a thing that's you and being confident about it. So it was a lot of fun to work with him because he kind of knew what he wanted to do. And I was like, great, let's do a great version of like what you're into. There wasn't all this trying to figure out like, what do you want to sound like? And what are you trying to say? Like he kind of already had a thing going. And that's the most fun for me is kind of teaming up with someone who has a vision, not trying to create a vision for the artist.
Yeah.
And then Hudson's cool too, because he's young. I think he was 19 whenever we started. I think he might still be 19. I'm not sure, but working with him is cool because, he hears everything. He's like, no. Guitar needs to kind of go like this. Like I want the guitar to feel like this. And I'm like, all right. Like he's very knowledgeable about what he likes and what's going on. So that's a lot of fun. You know, at the end of the day, those are the most fun artists to work with. The ones who are just really involved and hands on. That's the kind of people I like to work with.
Yeah. And then to see like, cause Muscadon you've been with from square one and their sound has just changed so much over the years. I always look at it as like BC, like before COVID Muscadine and like Burning at Both Ends was kind of like the end of that chapter.
Yeah.
And then coming out of the pandemic with Me on You and that whole era of what's followed with Dispatch and Teenage Dixie and this latest one and the stuff that you guys have in the tank where it's gotta be cool to watch an artist's sound, especially with as hands on as Gary and Chuck are.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's cool that we kind of keep finding new uncharted territory.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We'll work on some stuff that definitely has some hints of early Muscadine, but we're trying to find ways to push into some new territory because, you know, you can't make the same record over and over again. But the longer they've been doing it, the more they've honed in on like what they want to do. You know, I feel like a lot of young artists, I mean, they go through this exploratory phase. Like, where do I fit in this whole thing? Like, what do I, you know, the world's their oyster. Country music is such a wide genre now, stylistically.
Dude, it's insane.
So there's multiple lanes people can kind of go down, and they've got it. They're all trying to figure that out when they start their career. And what's cool is Gary and Charlie got to try a lot of things early on, and they've covered a lot of genres as well. And now they've kind of found what's unique to them, and even across the different styles that they still do, what's unique to them, like. Is more focused than ever, I feel like.
Yeah, Red Clay Country, baby.
Yeah.
They're doing their thing. And what I like about what they're doing now too is they've got like it's the live show sounds like the record because it's the band hanging out.
Yeah. Starting with that Dispatch record, it's been the band playing on all the records. So that's really cool for sure.
Yeah, that's gotta be exciting. What are the big challenges for someone looking to get into producing? Like the cost is, I guess, tough because you've got to obviously you start out every kid that moves here doesn't have the biggest budget.
Yeah, man, the producing thing, that's a funny word. It's gotten used in so many different ways. You know what I mean? Like what constitutes a producer? And every producer kind of has their own way of working. You know, there might be one producer who, well, they book a studio, they book a band, and they help the artist pick the songs. And they're the producer. But you might have another producer who is producing the song with the artist, playing every single instrument after writing the song with the artist. That's also a producer, and they're both fulfilling two very different roles. And so I feel like as a producer, you've got to find like what your strengths are and find where you fit in the process. You know, I love songwriting. So a big part of my production style is sitting down with the artist, even if the song is written, and saying, you know, I know you're going to a two minor chord here, but like, this would feel really good as a three minor instead. And I'm looking at lyrics. I'm looking at the bridge. I'm trying to, you know, find little spots, little ways to make it better. Cause at the end of the day, I love the songwriting portion. You've got some producers who are more track building type people like, oh, I bring the song to the producer. We spend a few days in this room and like we build out the whole track and like, that's their contribution as a producer. But I find that my role it differs artist to artist. You know, there's some artists that come in with these great songs that it's like, well, I don't need to, that's covered. We don't need to sit here and rehash anything about this song. This song's great. In this role, I just want to make what you hear in your head come out of the speakers, you know? And then in other scenarios, it is more hands-on where, all right, here's the vision for where you want to go with your career. Let's start writing songs to get us in that direction. So, let me actually answer your question. Challenges I guess for a younger producer, finding your strengths and really playing to those. Also, with the whole gear thing and having a studio, really depends on what genre of country you're going into. There's some genres within country where you can do it all in a room, or most of it in a room. You know, if all you need is if you can do everything in your own spot except drums, then you know you book an afternoon at a big studio, record some drums. But then these days you can do so much of it in a single room. So I guess you got to get creative. Do what you can with what you have at the time, and don't get married to one workflow, because that'll change as budgets change. It'll change as your taste and style changes.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, listening to the artist, I feel like, is probably the most important thing.
Yeah.
You know, remembering that the artist's name is what's on the song, not yours. Yeah, you might have a credit somewhere, but the song should always serve the artist and not serve you just because you think something's cool. If the artist isn't into it, like, absolutely not.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Dude.
Save that for your own music.
Absolutely. How much has like technology kind of changed things? Because it's like right now, I feel like it's easier for an artist to get a song out there, distribution wise, social media, all of that. I feel like there's so many, like, I know there's new plugins coming out every day, and there's new things, whether you're using Pro Tools or whatever, like, how much has the technology changed since you started doing this thing like 10 years
ago? Well, like you said, there's new stuff all the time. It's kind of exhausting. Like, I don't want to sit here and just try to always implement the newest stuff. You know, obviously the AI stuff now is absolutely wild.
Yeah. How does AI kind of affect what you guys do?
Well, I haven't utilized it in many ways, but there are some AI programs that'll do what's called track separation, where you can feed it an entire song and ask it to separate out drums, bass, vocals, and stuff like that. So one neat thing I've been able to do is sometimes we've done some like live performance videos in the live room, and so the vocal mics have drum bleed, and I've been able to use that artificial intelligence to remove the drum bleed from the microphone vocal recording, and that's been kind of cool. But, you know, on the songwriter side, I know people have been, like, using ChatGPT and stuff like that. And,
yeah, dude.
You know, it's basically just scrubbing the internet for you and regurgitating some things. And who knows where the AI thing's going to go. It's all still pretty wild to think about the possibilities and how it might change the landscape. But as far as the technology, I mean, the stuff I'm using now is largely the same as the stuff that's been around for 5 or 10 years. Just the features and the fidelity of it always is, you know, getting a little bit better. But what I try to remind myself is there's so many records I love there's records from the 70s I love, records from the 90s
I
love,
ask you, what have been
records
so many...
from the 2010s. So it's like, we don't need 2025 technology to make a great record.
Yeah.
And I remind myself that all the time. I was like, man, maybe I need some new audio converters. And I'm like, but wait, that record from 2009, I think, sounds great. And they had old technology. So I just remind myself, it's not the tools, it's the craftsman. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What were some of those records that, like, you looking back, like, inspire you?
Oh, man. Third Eye Blind's debut record, the self-titled from 1997. Sounds great. The first Rage Against the Machine record.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what drums should sound like. And that was 1990 or maybe 1991. I'm like, if they could record killer drum sounds in 90 or 91 with whatever they had, I don't need anything else than what I have right now. It's all on me to do a better job with what I have. I don't need to buy anything.
Yeah. Have you ever stretched outside of country as far as, like, producing people? Like, have you ever done, like, rock stuff or hip-hop stuff or that's a little outside?
I've wanted to do some rock. I just hadn't come across anything. You know, I haven't exactly gone out trying to find those acts, but I'd like to at some point do a little bit more rock. Interesting enough, with the hip-hop stuff, back before Jelly Roll went country.
Yeah, I know you were connected in the Jelly world at one point.
Yeah, I mixed 4 of the songs from a 2019 EP. I can't remember the EP. And then his last full hip-hop record, I think it was called Self-Medicated. It came out in 2021. I mixed 8 of those songs on that record. And then, you know, his next record after that was the rock record he did with Bayless that had Son of a Sinner on it, which kind of led to country Jelly Roll. But it's funny, the only hip-hop thing I've worked on was a now country artist's last hip-hop project. So I don't know what that says about the job I did on that, if it pushed him to another genre, but... that was cool working with him a little bit back in 2020. But honestly, I haven't strayed much too far out of the singer-songwriter, Americana, country world.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and there's so much of that here in Nashville, and it's like, yeah, go with what you know. What was it like working with Jelly?
Because
he's a big dude, but he's one of the nicest humans you'll ever meet.
He was just fun to be around, honestly. You know, he was a good hang. We did those few songs, and then he did a couple like live and studio recordings though over there at the studio too. And he was just cutting up the whole time. It was he was a good dude. He was fun to be around for sure.
Yeah, it's wild to see how things change and things grow and all of that. And you've gotten to go back out on the road over the past few years as well with Luke Grimes. What is it about being on the road? Is it nice to kind of get out of the studio and feel that itch of being on tour again?
Yeah, I mean, it's more about just getting some outside perspective, getting outside of these four walls that I spend almost every single day in, you know, hearing music over some big PAs, you know, whether it's at Stagecoach or a rodeo or something. It's just nice to kind of stretch myself a little bit because, you know, so much of what I do is in such a controlled environment.
Yeah.
It's a nice challenge to go out into a very uncontrolled environment where you don't know what you're going to have to work with and what the PA is going to sound like, what the room's going to be like. I feel like it's just kind of a fun challenge. And it's also just nice being in another city for 12 hours at a time, you know, finding some random new coffee shop or thrift shop just kind of forces you to do something, you know, because I'm such a workaholic. It's like I'm either at work or I'm at home. I don't just peruse down downtown streets, like walking around.
Oh, yeah.
But if I'm out on tour and I have 3 hours until load in, it's like, well, what else am I going to do? So it kind of forces me to take a break and get out of music for just a couple hours at a time.
And it's got to be cool to see the crowd reaction to songs too. Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
Get to be at a show because you got into this because you love music.
Yeah.
So to get to be at a show or at a festival, that's got to be cool
too. Honestly, one of my favorite things about touring is just getting to choose the pre-show music.
Oh.
And you know, one of my favorites is Dean Summerwin's Parked Out by the Lake.
Oh, classic.
So, you know, a lot of time it's like last song before Luke goes on stage, we might hit him with some Parked Out by the Lake. And it's just, I love seeing in the crowd, like when people notice, like a couple people realize like, wait, he's playing Parked Out by the Lake. And they just give me a nod. I'm like, yeah. I see you. I got you.
How did that opportunity come about working with Luke? Because I know after the Yellowstone stuff, he got into music. And what's that kind of been like getting to know him and being out there?
Well, it was exactly 2 years ago this week that we started rehearsals for the first Luke Grimes shows ever. So my buddy Pete Wilson has a company that does show builds, and either Luke's management or label reached out to Pete like, hey, we've got this artist. We need to put together a band and crew. So Pete called up, you know, the guitar player, bass player, and put together the whole band 2 years ago. And at first it was like, yeah, he's just got a little four or five show tour with a Stagecoach set. You know, we'll do a bunch of rehearsals. I'm like, yeah, you know, that sounds fun. Like I hadn't toured for 3 years at that point. Oh, I was so like,
you were like, yeah, let's get out there.
Sure. It's like, you know, it was a small commitment at the time. It was just a few shows. I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And then they were going to do the rehearsals at the studio anyway. Well, that's convenient. Yeah. Well, let's do it. So I went out and did that and realized, wow, I actually really enjoyed doing it. The band and crew were great and made new friends. And it just kind of moved on from there. They're like, all right, well, hey, we just booked a couple shows in July, a couple in August. We're going to do a short fall tour. And I was like, yeah, I'll hang around. I'm in. And yeah, it's been going for 2 years now. And I think we've done maybe 50 or 60 shows at this point.
Nice.
You know, it's not so busy that I can't still run the studio and produce music. And that's kind of where I'm at with the touring thing. If it ever gets to more than 30 shows a year, I'll just have to be out. I can't run my business, be the dad I want to be, and be gone that many weekends a year.
Yeah, I was going to ask that too. How do you, because obviously like you've got the little ones, you've got a wife, like how do you balance being the dad, being the family man, while also running your own studio, because both are extremely full-time commitments.
Yeah, it's very carefully. Now, luckily, we live just 10 minutes from the studio, so I can kind of run back and forth some if I need to. But the hardest thing is just balancing the little bit of touring I do with the family life. You know, for example, Science Fair was supposed to be tonight. Well, they canceled school, so they moved it tomorrow night. But I'm going to be with Ricky Skaggs in Missouri tomorrow, filling in for my buddy on front of house. So I'm now missing the Science Fair.
Yeah.
And Hank was kind of disappointed about that, you know, and I was like, well, but mom will film the award ceremony if we win. He's like, yeah, but live is better, dad. And I'm like, you're right, son. Live is better.
Live is better.
So I'm always trying to balance the two. You know, with Luke, I had a show on a Friday night in Phoenix, Arizona, and Hank's season opener of the NASCAR Youth Series racing that he does was the next morning. Luckily, I found a red eye out of Phoenix at 11:45 p.m. that got me to BNA at 8:13 a.m., and then I went straight to the racetrack. And I'm always just trying to balance, yeah, being there for my kids' sporting events, spending time with them, while also, you know, being able to do a little bit of touring and make some good records. And it ebbs and flows. You know, there's seasons where I'm gone more than I want to be, and I have to let it disappoint them a little bit. But then I try to make it up in the next 4 weeks where I can be around more.
Yeah.
All right, you know, might leave work a few extra days or stay for a later morning and try to make up that time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like you said, it's all about balancing that. Have they gotten the music bug? Like, do they enjoy listening to music and stuff?
Driver, our 4-year-old's always asking for Rattlesnake Ridge Muscadine song. You know,
that's a good one.
The hook on that was like, I'm gonna run it all night long. Well, Driver thinks he means like physically running. So if you put on Rattlesnake Ridge, he just starts running around the house, which is funny. Yeah, so. I mean, a lot of the time, like while I'm cooking dinner, I'll put on like a record that I'm currently working on. And so the kids always like, oh, is this your song, Dad? I'm like, yeah, this is what I'm working on. Or if I turn on the radio and it, like a Brooks and Dunn song comes on, they're like, Dad, did you make this? I'm like, I wish I did, son. I wish I made this.
Life would
this
be a little
Lost
different.
And Found by Brooks and Dunn. Yeah, I was like, this is great music. I was like, so about the music bug, I mean, they like to come to the studio. They like to bang on the drums, play the piano a little bit. Neither one of them have like begged to learn an instrument yet. You know, we're still 4 and 6, but we're still young.
Very young. Yeah.
I didn't get really interested in music till I was maybe 9 or 10. So, you know, if they want to learn music, they've got some great opportunities too. But if they don't, I'm cool with that too. Whatever they're into, you just want, you know, you want your kids to find their thing.
Yeah. Going back to Muscadine, what's it like having the artists be like, cause on the producer credits for all those, it's you and it's Gary and it's Chuck, and Gary's very in on being involved. And like, I've been there for some of them. I've seen the videos and all of that where he's right on the board while the guys are playing just like you are. What's it like kind of being having them so involved?
And that's my favorite though. You know, like I said, having someone who knows what they want and now we can just go for that is great. And I love how involved him and Chuck are in the whole vision of these records. You know, I don't want to say it's easier for, I mean, it is easier for me. I'm not having to figure it out for the artist and come up with all of the ideas. Gary comes in like, hey, here's what we're going to do. And I get to just kind of like guide it. Or maybe say like, all right, this is cool. I hear what you're doing. What if we just did it with this instrument instead? Or, you know, what if we cut this in half? And I get to kind of fill in the gaps and be some quality control and versus having to do it ground up. So the more the artist is involved, the better the project is, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Or at least that's been my experience. It's a more collaborative effort. It's not all on one guy. It's three guys' minds working together. So, I mean, that's why those credits read that way is because, I mean, those guys are in this thing just as much as I am.
Yeah, they're in it on all fronts their business.
Yeah.
Like, and that's when people ask me, they're like, what was it like working with Muscadine? I'm like, they are the CEOs of Muscadine, Bloodline, of Stancaster, Grapevine, or whatever it is now, you know? Like,
100%.
And being so hands-on, and I feel like that's kind of helped with, like, the identity of the studio.
Yeah.
It's like you and Matt work in a way where it's like artists can come in and do what they want to do.
Yeah.
You be as hands-on as you want
to be. Well, I remember whenever my first band recorded with somebody else, there felt like a little bit of a power dynamic. Like, okay, here's a producer. He does this for a living. We're just a band who's never recorded. And it kind of makes it hard to stick up for yourself. You're like, well, if this guy's the expert, I guess we should do what he says. And I've heard that story from so many different artists who've walked into, you know, bigger Music Row studios or worked with some, you know, very accomplished producer, is they felt like they couldn't speak up because it's like, well, all these people just seem like they know more than I, so I'm just going to kind of take a back seat. And then they get their song back in 2 or 3 weeks. We're like, wow, this sounds really good, but like, it's not me.
Yeah.
And I've heard that story and I've been in those shoes. So I've tried to go hard the other way. I'm like, let's make this sure this is 100% you. You know, and if I have an idea of like, okay, I think this would be cool on the bridge. Hey guys, let's try it. I'm telling the band and I'm looking at the artist. I'm like, what do you think? Like, is this a you thing or is this just a me thing? Because if I'm just stroking my ego with this, like, let's nix it right now, but I'll need you to make this call. You know, I want them to feel like they have ownership, like it is their music. You know, because in Nashville, too, so much of the way this thing works, you know, it's the artist with songs, and then we're hiring session musicians and studio players. So on a lot of these things, the artist is just the vocal. You know what I mean? But I want the artist to have a say in that drum fill. I want the artist to have a say in that's the guitar solo, because that guitar solo is on their song. So it should reflect their taste, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's going to be a part of their live show.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone's paying money to come and see
exactly.
them.
So it shouldn't be just be up to me and the guitar player to decide that that's the solo that they're going to go play out for the next 10 years on tour. Like, hey, artist, do you want more bends in that solo? Is it too shreddy at the end? So I would just always really try to lean and try to get the artist to think about these things too. Like, all right, figure out what you like, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the approach I take.
Yeah. How important is networking with what you do? Because like you're talking about studio musicians, and I feel like a lot of it is guys that you meet, guys or girls that you meet along the way, or the friend of a friend, or a degree of separation. Like, how important has networking been in your process of getting to where you are?
So it's all been friendship building, and most of it has been by chance. I've never really tried to go out and, I mean, the first year I was in town, I was at Whiskey Jam every week, you know, because you don't know anyone. You're like, hey, you know, we should write sometime, that whole thing.
Yeah.
But after that, after I'd met a few people, most of it was kind of organic from there. It's like, people want to work with people they want to hang out with.
Yeah, that's what I always tell people. You get to create cool stuff with your friends.
Yes. That's what this is. That's the goal. So, you know, for example, that Luke Grimes gig, I met a guitar player named Austin Adams, and we now work together all the time in the studio because we just were hanging out on the road. I was like, oh, you're funny. Like, Andrew, you're a great guitar player. Hey, let's start playing on some of my records and all. So it needs to feel authentic. Like you don't want to ever meet somebody and have them feel like you're trying to get something out of them. So I don't really like cold outreach to anyone. It feels forced. There's a lot of people in town that I hope I one day organically run into and get to work with, but I never would just want to like DM somebody like, hey man, we need to do this or you should come over to my studio or anything like that. I feel like if it's supposed to happen, it'll happen.
Yeah.
I can look at my last 10 years and see, well, if I hadn't said yes to that gig or run into this person, then this whole trajectory would have changed. But I don't feel like you can plan any of that stuff. It just kind of happens, you know.
Yeah.
I like to say we're all just a gnat on the feather of a wing of a bird flying through the sky. And sometimes you land on a good bird. Sometimes you land on a bad bird, you know.
Yeah.
We don't have a whole lot of control over it.
Yeah, we don't have a whole lot of control. How big of a stable of like studio guys do you have to keep to run a studio and crank out as much as you're cranking out? Or are you able to rely on certain people for certain things? Like you have like your guy that rips on Dobro, or you have your fiddle player.
I've got like two or three people at kind of each instrument that I can call on. And, you know, I always cross my fingers when I'm trying to book someone like, oh, let's hope that he's open kind of thing. But there's two or three drummers, two or three guitar players, just two pedal steel players I ever work with. Andy Ellison and Eddie Dunlap. They're both incredible. They've got their own thing. So if they're unavailable, I might just move the session or they'd have to send me the track later or something.
What's it like getting, I know people talk about like farming stuff out or like getting things like where the musician, like I know Kurt's done that a bunch.
Yeah. They call it flying tracks. Yeah. They record it at home and send it over. I don't like to do that unless I have to. I try to do as much of it together in the room as possible. I like to hear the big picture while it's happening, because usually what someone does will influence what someone else does. And there might be an idea we never have because pedal steel player wasn't there that day. But there's some instances where it just doesn't make sense financially for the artist to bring in somebody for one song, or, you know, or just scheduling doesn't work out. It's like, well, no, we want this guy on the record, but this is the only day you're in town, so we'll have him fly. And I've built those relationships over time enough that I know what I'm going to get. Andy and I have worked together for 9 years, and he just flew me a pedal steel track yesterday. And like, I know what Andy does. Andy knows what I like. So we've got that relationship figured out, but I don't do a whole lot of it unless I have to.
Yeah.
I'm a little too hands-on and a little too much of a control freak to not be able to like stop it in the moment and be like, okay, this is cool, but change this one thing. And you can't do that whenever you're asking someone to do it far away and then send it to you on their own time.
Yeah, and you've built out the studio to have the capabilities
exactly.
to capture the best live sound that you possibly yeah. can in the confines of that basement.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly.
Like, which is awesome. What are some projects that you're working on of like some up-and-comers or the next yeah. Muscadine one? Because I know it's rotating of who comes in there. You and Matt stay so damn busy.
Yeah, especially this time of year, winter yeah. and spring, it's a busy time. But Gary and I are co-producing, it'll be a full length, but we've done half of it for Taylor Honeycutt.
Oh, dude, and yeah, she's a badass.
Yes, and we got to write this song. Gary, Charlie, I, Taylor, and Bucky got together and started writing songs for this project that Gary had kind of a vision for. And he's like, Taylor, you've got to do something like this. And so we went in and wrote these songs for this project specifically. And it's unlike anything Taylor's done yet. And I think it's going to be killer. So I'm really excited about that one right now. We just finished tracking another full-length Tyler Halverson record. And then last week we finished tracking the next Muscadine record. So I'm excited about all three of those projects, really.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What's it like, too, where like you start out with an artist and then they kind of go off, whether it's with a deal or to try something different, and then they come back? Because I know like Gary and Charlie were that, you know?
Yeah.
And I know Tyler now coming back, like, where you keep that relationship. You're with them at square one,
yeah.
kind of in the middle. It's like dating somebody in middle yeah. school, and then in high school they try something else, and then freshman year of college yeah. they're like, hey, right? Like what's it like kind of getting like being at step one and then coming back in at like step two and yeah. a half or three?
Well, I can never fault anybody for trying out there.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, hey, there's so many options out there.
Many,
no, like, I'm not saying that's a wrong thing to do,
yeah.
but just what's that dynamic like?
Yeah, I mean, what's cool is they come back with more perspective, because like if they've only ever worked with you, they've only ever seen how you do things. Now they get to go out and, you know, work with a different producer, write songs with different people, and they'll learn from those experiences. They'll learn what they like about them, what they don't like about them. Now, they might like that experience better, and then we never work together again. And that happens all the time, and that's
yeah.
okay. I'm not the right fit for everyone, but it is cool whenever they've had those experiences and come back, they're usually a little bit more confident about what they do want, because, you know, well, we've done it with you, I've done it with someone else, I might have done songs with these other four producers, and like I said, they're learning something from all of it. And then I feel like they come back like, okay, I've seen how the sausage is made five different ways, but here's how I want to make the sausage.
Yeah.
And then kind of come back with some more clarity.
Yeah, you talk about how confident Tyler was when you first met
yeah.
him. The confidence of him right now, when you talk about it in that way, must be at a very high
yeah.
level.
Well, what's important for these artists, too, is, you know, in this industry, everyone's going to give you their opinion. You're going to have managers telling you their opinion. You're going to have A&R labels giving you their opinion.
Even publishers with your songs.
Publishers giving yeah. you their opinion. And you can kind of get lost in the weeds with it. It's like, well, if they all say I should be doing this, or if this is actually the best song, you know, it's easy for people to kind of lose their inner voice a little bit too. And I feel like it's important for the artist to remember, like, they are the artist. Trust yourself, because you will get 10 different opinions from 10 different people. So as long as the artist can kind of remember that they're the artist at the end of the day, and what they care about and thinks good is the music they should make, then it'll continue to get better. But I've also seen artists that kind of get a little aimless over a few years. Well, I thought this is what I wanted to do. I thought this was the sound, but then nobody liked it, and my publisher actually said that I should be doing this instead, and now I don't know. And that's a challenging part of this industry.
Yeah.
Because yeah, once you get five cooks in the kitchen, then the meal is terrible.
Oh, dude,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah. 100%, man. Yeah, that does make it tough, because you do have, as your career grows, your team grows, mm-hmm. and there, like you said, there are more cooks in the kitchen. There's more voices.
And collaboration can be great.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like
you have the right team behind you. You can do anything.
Oh yes, but the power structure has to be right. You know, the artist needs to remember, like, these people are working for me. I'm not working for these people. So yeah, a manager might have three ideas and one of them is gold, but the artist needs to have the gall to be like, all right, one of these ideas, like, that's just not me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Standing up for what they want to, do. What are some big goals for you guys this year as far as the Amber Sound goes? Because this is the first year where, talk about kind of the renovations upstairs
yeah.
and the build out to now where it's a full building.
Yeah, so starting in January, we took over the upstairs that had previously been Muscadine Bloodline's merch fulfillment office and also Nikki T's residence.
Nikki T's residence and
Raised Rowdy headquarters.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, dude.
Yeah.
The Raised Rowdy story doesn't it has a chapter of the Amber Sound,
yeah.
And it was so cool to be over there with you guys.
Yeah,
man.
I saw you like every week.
Oh, yeah, almost every day. Yeah,
seeing Nikki all the time was great. But no, we got to the point where I needed my own personal mix room. We needed more space. We just brought on our first employee. My buddy Jordan Burnett is there every week. He's building a new vocal booth upstairs right now so that we can, you know, if someone's cutting in the big studio downstairs, we can still be cooking up something in the studio upstairs. Yeah. So, yeah, that's we've been putting in a lot of hours these past 3 months, like renovating the entire upstairs and just making the place more functional, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as goals for the studio, it never really changes. Just trying to level up. Just always trying to make every project the best it can be, better. Trying to grow my ear, trying to, you know, upgrade everything we can so that people have the best experience.
Yeah.
And then me on a personal front, I'm just trying to live more, you know? You move to Nashville, you hustle, because you have to make it in this industry. And then I've been hustling for 10 years, and I'm like, man, I don't know if I want to hustle this hard anymore. So I'm trying to go to the driving range in the middle of a day on a Tuesday if I can, or something like that.
Go watch Hank race a car.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I dipped out of work early on Tuesday, and we went to the track and ran 150 laps, like trying to get another tenth off of our lap times. Like, I'm trying to do more of stuff like that, you know what I mean? And I feel like whenever I'm in a better headspace, I make better work anyway. So it usually if I'm working too much, the work usually suffers. So I'm just trying to find that, like, that right balance of, you know, I'm not chasing every dollar that comes by the door anymore. I'm more focusing on, like, all right, I know what I'm good at, I know what I want to do, let me put my effort into that. And if something's not that, let me just say no to it. Because for a long time I had to say yes to everything just to pay the bills. Yeah,
same with us, dude. That's what you do when you're starting.
That's what you do. And you know, I feel like I'm out of that chapter now. And if I'm not a good fit for something, I have no problem passing it on to someone who I do think is a good fit for it.
Yeah, and you, I'm sure, have a network of other producers and people that you're happy to present opportunities to.
There's so many great producers in this town. Like, there's a never ending list of great producers. So I've got no problem just being like, oh, yeah, hit up this guy. He's going to be great for you.
Yeah.
Because I just want to focus on the things I'm actually good at. I've tried too long to be good at everything. and it worked for a long time. Like, it helped me build the business I've built by doing a little bit of everything. But, now I just kind of want to focus in on what I'm good at and just do less of it.
Yeah. And now, looking back to that night that was like a big like you say, when you hop, when you're where we land on this bird, and you land on that bird where you're going out on that gig with Ray, and you end up meeting Gary that night, and you're in town for 3 months at that point. What's something that you would tell that kid that had just moved out here from South Carolina? Looking back 10 years, what advice would you give to that kid that's playing gigs on Broadway and working at a studio and booking his own sessions late night and all of that, to where you're at now, just in life or in professional stuff?
I mean, I feel like things all kind of worked out, but I did, at that stage in my life, I really wanted to find some more mentors. And I might would encourage him harder to, like, hey, find some really good mentors. But my problem is, I say problem, it's not a problem, we're all on our own journey, but I moved up here, my wife and I had been married 6 months, so, you know, there was some responsibility. Like, all right, it's my wife and I, we moved to this town, we came up here with $6,000, and by month five we had $500 left. And it's like, well, I've got to work, I've got to make money, you know. And so I wasn't able to, like, intern any longer or try to work under other people. I just had to kind of start doing it. And I learned by doing, you know, we all learned by doing, but I feel like I might could have learned faster if I could have had more time to just, like, work under some other producers, you know, a few months with this guy, 6 months with this guy. I feel like maybe I would have gotten some perspective quicker, but I can't really give that advice to younger me because it didn't really feel like an option at the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I was making it happen. Things were kind of working, but, you know, I hear that early work from 10 years ago. I'm like, man, it would have been great to have a mentor say, like, hey, I hear what you're going for, but let me help you a little bit with this.
Yeah.
But I, you know, that younger me, he was hungry, he was ambitious, and I mean, I did what I felt like I needed to do in the time. So
yeah.
I don't know if I have much to tell him.
What would younger you say if he saw what the next 10 years would?
Oh, I don't think he'd
being a dad and getting to have that family aspect and finding some great artists and being a big part of their career to still like. How would that young wide-eyed kid from South Carolina, that motivated, hungry kid from South Carolina, feel about where you're at?
I think he'd be
having the Ember Sound.
I think he'd be a little surprised, you know, because I even didn't think. I don't want to say I didn't think it would work. I always knew that like I'd make it work. I've always been a like figure it out and make it work kind of person. But, I don't think he would believe that. You know, I'm not that I've had like tons of success. I'm successful by some metrics, and success means something different to everyone. You know, my goal was just to pay the bills in music somehow, and I was able to do that. So I think he'd be proud seeing like, oh, cool, it worked. We paid the bills with music. I think he'd be surprised at how we ended up doing it, you know. I love songwriting, but it's what I've done the least amount of. As far as sitting down, you know, maybe 10 times a year I sit in a room and like write a song. Now, as a producer, I'm using those muscles, working, molding other people's songs. But, you know, I don't think 10 year ago Ryan would believe like the songs that I've gotten to write with people and some of the lyrics I've gotten to like come up with. And I was like, nah, you wouldn't come up like, because every now and again I have a good one. You know what I mean? It's like I have a write with someone and I'm like, I've got two good lines in this song, you know? And so I think he'd be surprised at the songwriting aspect and where I ended up musically, because early on I didn't think I had what it took musically to like be a legit producer. So like I was leaning into the engineering side a lot, like, okay, cool, I can plug in the cable and this is how I record.
I'll push the buttons, I'll move the faders.
Because my idea was like, oh, well, I'm not a good enough musician, I'll find these great musicians and I'll just record them. But I could never keep my hand out of the music side of it, because the music side is what brought me to the whole table.
Yeah, it's what you love.
So yeah, it's what I love. So I don't know if I would have believed how hands-on I've ended up getting with me. Like the fact that I still play bass on like 70% of what I produce, I don't think he would have believed that. It's like, no, surely Ryan would have just been like hiring another bass player by now. But like, no, I'm still, you know,
that's awesome.
Still contributing a lot musically, which is great, because that was my original love of it all. You know, I was never super passionate about the technical side of like, well, I love the impedance of the SM7 because of the way that it sounds or whatever. You know, I was just like, oh, I love guitars, let's put a microphone in front of it kind of thing. So
yeah,
I've gotten to stay on the music side more than the technical side, which is what I'm grateful for.
Yeah, you talk about like the songwriting thing. What are some of your favorite songs that you've gotten to be a part of as a composer, as a songwriter?
Well, Muscadine's Me on You.
Yeah, I was going to say, I forgot if you...
That was cool. Yeah, Gary and I wrote the chorus to it one day, and then 2 weeks later, him and Chuck got together and wrote the verses. And I remember when Gary sent me those verses, and I'm hearing Chuck say, I need your kiss like a catfish need a stank bait. Can't take the way you're going to drop my jaw. I was like, golly, them boys can... I mean, they've always been great writers, but getting to hear like a chorus that Gary and I wrote and then hear what him and Chuck cooked up on the verses, like, all right, this is... If you can say stank bait in a song, like, that's a cool song. And I got the word jambalaya in the chorus, which is the longest word I think I've gotten into a song.
Wow.
So I was like, all right, cool. It contributed something. It feels good to be part of something as cool as that song ended up being.
Yeah, and for that song to do what it did.
Yeah.
That was like the big moment
that
coming
was a big
out
one
of COVID.
For them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the big TikTok moment.
So that was cool to be a part of that song, like on the writer side. And it was really cool of, you know, Gary and Charlie are such good writers and they write with so many good writers around town. It's been cool for them to want to involve me on some of these. You know, the last three records, I think I've gotten to be a co-writer on one or two songs on each of these last three records, which is cool for them to see the value in me to be like, hey, let's finish these up with Ryan. So
yeah,
that's fun just to be along for the ride on some of those. Cause like they don't need me on these writes. Like Gary and Charlie, Gary will write a song all by himself and it'll be a great song. He doesn't have to, but it's cool for them to have like the family mentality. They have to be like, oh yeah, let's just finish these up with Ryan. It's been cool for sure.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. That's awesome. Is there, I know they're all kind of like your babies, but is there like a specific project where you're like, this is what a Ryan Yeoman's project sounds like, or one that you're incredibly more proud of than the other? So I know you've worked on so many.
Man, that's a really hard thing.
Or it can even be a couple. You can list a few. Like, I'll make it a little bit easier for you.
Oh, man. Some projects.
Projects or single or whatever.
Yeah.
Or moments that have come out of the studio where you're like, that was really cool.
I mean, Tyler Halverson's Mac Miller, that song.
Dude, I love that
from
song.
From hearing that song the first time, like the chorus felt so good. And I was really excited and proud of that one at the time that we did that. Let me think here. Oh, Azalea Blooms, which is a Muscadine song from, I guess it probably came out a couple years ago. I just remember Gary and I and Weston working on the slide guitar part on that song. And I mean, just that song is just a lyrical masterpiece. It's a beautiful song. I remember just like feeling something. I was like, oh, this is a song. And then a project that hasn't come out yet, but Gary and I and Charlie got to go down to a cabin in Mississippi back in December and start working on their next record. And it's the first time we've gotten to go do something on location, like outside of the studio. And there's some moments on that record that you can tell like we're in a different place, and some really special songs that they've written about kind of the life stage that they're in.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say, you know, you work on so much music over time. And I'm sure I'm forgetting so many like cool artists I've worked with and gotten to make some great pieces of art with, over time, but I don't know. It's all a process. You ask me that next week, I'll probably have a way better answer.
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah, and or like the amount of sessions. Like, you never know when gold is going to strike, but you don't know unless you're out there doing it.
Exactly. I'm just always trying to just work. I'm just trying to make everything the best it can be, and then it just passes by, and I'm working on the next thing. And I don't always get to maybe appreciate it as much as I wish I could sit down and appreciate it, because I'm always just kind of working on the
Well, as someone who listens to a lot of the guys and girls that you work with, coming from Nikki T as well, we appreciate the hell out of you, dude, and we appreciate what you do and the stuff that comes out of the Amber Sound. And I think that like people that want to do the producer thing, like it can be done, and you're living proof of that. Like you came here and you figured it out.
Yeah, it can be done. You just have to want it, and you have to work a long time, work really hard for it.
Yeah, you have to hustle and then go out there and let it all be organic. Like you said, the friendships are a huge part of it.
It's just making friends, being a good friend to people, and
being a good person.
It goes a long way.
It really does, dude. But I appreciate you coming on here and
doing this.
Braving it through the storms and all the chaos going on out there right now. But everybody can find, they can look up Amber Sound.
Yeah, at the Amber Sound on Instagram, at Ryan Yeoman's Music for me. We're on the internet, the Amber Sound Recording, or theambersound.com, not recording. No.
Yeah, what's it been like seeing just the studio grow to now where you're just getting hit up by
Man, it's cool. In? And what I love about the studio is it's a very collaborative environment. Matt uses it now. Also, Dylan Murphy.
Oh, dude, Dylan's great. I was going to say, you talk about like a mentor, and like Dylan's like a little brother to you guys in a sense.
Dylan's cool. Incredible. He's been touring with Laney, I guess, a year longer now.
Yeah, then before that was with Ben Chapman, right?
Yeah, with Ben Chapman. And I think he's bringing, like, Laney's going to be there in the studio in a couple weeks to record something. I don't know if it's like an ACM thing. Record some type of audio for something. And it's cool to like just have Laney coming back after, you know, the last time she was there in the studio was 2020 to sing pieces with Muscadine. So it's cool that he's kind of in our ecosystem. He's bringing some projects through now. My buddy Mitch Parks, another great producer in town, who I met him when he was playing keys for Patrick Droney 4 years ago.
Wow.
I was doing front house for a Droney show and Mitch was the keys player. You know, he later on went to tour as a guitar player for Ed Sheeran all of last year, which is wild.
That's crazy.
He's toured with Lynn and Stella and a lot of great artists. He's now there sharing an upstairs room with Matt. So I'm getting to like hang out with him and pick his brain because he's a great producer also. So that's what I love about the season we're in now is it's more collaborative than ever. We have 4 or 5 producers in and out every day. And it feels a little bit more like an office, which I've never had like an office like workspace feeling. It's like it's always been me. You know, okay, I live in this house now. Go down to the basement and work on my computer and be a producer man. And didn't really get to have the whole camaraderie of cutting up for a couple minutes, you know what I mean? And then going back to work. So it's cool that there's a lot of cool projects now being made there that I'm not even a part of but I can just like see happen in the building that I helped build. And there's some pride in that too, that in some small way I helped facilitate these projects. Even if I'm not the producer and I'm not touching a thing on the project, it's cool to see other people thrive in an environment that I got to create.
Yeah, dude, there's something powerful about the independent studio, man.
Yeah.
There's something powerful.
Long live the independent studio.
Long live the independent studio, baby. God bless Hermitage, Tennessee. Yeah. But, dude, thank you for coming on. I'm glad you enjoyed the surf stuff. I'm going to send you home. I got an 8-pack of those to send home with you.
We got the green tea hits. It's
cool. And it's the green tea variety packs. I think there's like mango, there's green tea lemonade, there's like a peach green tea.
Man, it's
like,
about to be summer, ain't it?
Oh, yeah, dude. That'll be great. You get the boat all warmed up. Yeah. That'll be great. Get it all going. And we got some hats and stuff. You can take some back for, cool. for the little guys and get Hank wearing it when he's doing his post-race press conference. do the hat dance.
Hey, we're taking sponsorships for the 2025 season. So
Braze Rowdy on a car would be awesome.
Hey, we're still selling the hood. The hood is still open, so we can talk about it.
We definitely can. But Ryan, thank you so much for coming on, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate you. I'll be sure to check out the Amber Sound. Look up our man Ryan Yeomans. Any producers out there, this is a guy that you want to know and a guy that has lived the life of grinding and getting to where he's at. So you'll be sure to check out the Amber Sound. And as always, thank you for watching and checking out, listening. Be sure to visit RaiseYourEye.com. Shout out to our friends from Surfside. No bubbles, no troubles, sunshine in a can. And this has been, for my man Ryan, I'm Matt Burrell. This has been Behind the Music Biz.